Hello and welcome to Bitches on Comics. I'm your host, Essie Fleenor, and thank you for joining us for these flashback files. Right now, Bitches on Comics is on hiatus while we sort out some personal matters and get to work behind the scenes, making sure we can come back strong very soon. These flashback files are our opportunity to share with you some of the amazing work we've been doing over on Patreon. We're so happy to be back and so glad you've joined us. Please stick around for this flashback file where we share an episode that originally appeared on our Patreon. We would like to thank all our patrons and all our supporters who've been there for us through this whole amazing podcast. And if you haven't joined us on Patreon, you can do so at patreon.com/queerspec. On behalf of Sarah Century, Monica Estrella Negra, Kate Warner, and Supriya Saxena, I'm Essie Fleenor, and we're so glad that you've joined us.
Hey everyone, welcome to Mediums of Horror, a podcast series within a series brought to you by Bitches on Comics and thereby Queer Spec. My name is Sarah Century, and I'm here to walk you through some of the creators, curators, and critics pushing the limits of the horror world. This episode, we're talking about horror criticism, horror podcasts, and I don't know, just a lot of horror stuff. Joining me this episode is Sheree Bohannon from the Nightmare on Fear Street podcast. All that said, nobody introduces Sheree better than Sheree herself, so I'll go ahead and turn the mic over to her. Take it away.
I am Sheree, pronouns she, her, hers. You can find my personal shenanigans at Miss Sheree, that's MissSSharai, on Twitter and Instagram. I also have a website I need to update, which is ShereeBohannon.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. My podcast, you can find at Nightmare Fierce on Twitter and A Nightmare on Fear Street on Instagram and Facebook. And we have an all my links that nobody uses, but it's there and it's pretty and you can contact us in so many ways if you look at it.
Already relating so hard to the need of update website. Oh my God.
Oh my God. They're hard.
I keep telling people I'm going to do it because people are like, isn't the last time you updated yours like 3 years ago? I'm just like, yeah, but it's like, I'm going to do it like this weekend.
Yeah. No, it's rough because like I am a playwright usually and like COVID cleared everything out. And so it's been depressing. It's like a graveyard of what was going to happen. And then you have to fight the formatting because no matter what you delete, something's wrong and it's like 10 minutes on how to fix it and a Googling and crying. And it's like, who wants that kind of stress in a pandemic?
Oh God, I know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or yeah, it's 100% that where it's like, oh man, that project just never took off or something. And it's like, oh, that link's not good anymore. Maybe I should correct that. And then it's just like, what if I just ignore it and pretend it never happened? And then everybody can see it whenever they come to my website. But for me, it's just something that never happened.
Exactly. I almost got in trouble because a thing was like, your website says this production is going to happen. I'm like, my website says a lot of things. It did not happen. Here's the artistic director. Good day.
My website is full of lies and you're going to have to be the one who navigates that. But exactly. You have critical thinking tools and I trust you to do it. Yeah, same. Oh my God. So yeah, I guess like to begin with, how I found you was through the podcast. So let's talk just a little bit about that. Like why was it important to start a horror film commentary podcast? And how did it come to be?
So my friend Trent and I went to undergrad together many, many moons ago. And we would just like drink and watch horror movies. And during the pandemic, we had all this downtime. We were catching up and doing the same, but on Zoom, because he's in Arkansas and I was in Indiana. And I was like, Trent, what if we stopped doing this just for us and started recording it to see if people would listen? And we thought like three friends would listen, but it came to be much bigger than that. And now we have like international listeners and like we're actually doing things that are not just in jokes, but us actually like doing the dissection and doing the research. And it's been kind of fun and fascinating to see how far it goes. The horror community, for the most part, has been super welcoming. We've had other people who also feel left out or often ignored. And it's just nice to have a space that's safe from all of the aggressive white male energy, because I'm sure that we've all been on the internet and then told to shut up because we don't know what we're talking about because aggressive cis straight white men are just not okay. And so we were like, what if we averted that? And it's been cool because we found other people who are not that, and we're all sort of having our own little like community of love on Twitter every once in a while. And it's just great. It's healing something I didn't know that could be healed. And it's just awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm thinking too about how it is like that with horror, because it's like I'm into it as you are. I'm into a bunch of different things. And so I'll have different friends and who are like, okay, I'll go see like an MCU movie with you or something like that. But then it's like you're like, okay, cool. Well, if you want to go see this horror movie later, and they're just like, I don't think I'm ready for that or something. Yeah. And you're just like, I feel like I always like 100% am like, yeah, of course, respect your own boundaries. Like, you're the one who gets to set them. But I'm also like, I always think it's a little strange how people have this sort of hard line about it where they're like, no, if I'm going to watch, I watch one horror movie a year. It's one that everybody talks about and like is one of the, it's like if somebody likes Johnny Cash, they'll be like, oh, but he's not really country. Like, I don't like country, right? No. So it's like, people will watch like the horror movie of the year. Like, people watch like Midsommar or something, and they were just like, but that wasn't really a horror movie. And it's like, it is so that is super a horror movie.
It is. I've been having a lot of fun explaining to like my friends and my friends of friends that there are different subgenres in horror because everybody has a clear image, and it's because the franchises are so prevalent. And so people are always like, oh, yeah, it's Jason, it's Freddy, it's Michael. And it's like, no. There's also space for A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. Yeah. Promising Young Woman should also be in here. And so it's been fun to be like, you like horror, you just don't like the horror that is usually what's selling the most.
Yeah. And I noticed too that whenever I'm thinking about horror, cause like people will be like, oh, so like, what do you like about horror? And it's like, well, what kind of horror? There's like so many different kinds. So it's like that kind of amorphous nature to it, because also I think that horror like will creep into just about any other genre at certain times. Like, I think that there's a very strong, like people would generally say like, you know, Alien is sci-fi. And it's like, that's also a horror movie though. That's like a scary monster who's coming to eat you. Like, that's terrifying.
The tagline was, no one hears you scream in space. I don't know what else they could have done. And then they were like, also, it rips out of people. And I'm like, what else do you need from them?
Like, extreme body horror. But this is like people who would be like, Cronenberg is way too much for me or something. And it's like, well, maybe if you like dip your toe in, like, maybe you would like it. But like, also, you know, once again, set all your own boundaries in life. But I also I think that that's something that's really interesting about how people who aren't necessarily fans of horror view horror, is like, you'll have people be like, oh, that's like, you know, or even horror fans, like you'll have these like discourses around like, well, this horror I think is fine, and like that horror is for like the real sickos or something like that. And I'm like, well, there's horror movies that I won't watch, right? Like, there's ones that are like, I don't need to see Human Centipede. I just don't need to see it. Now, I also, I know people though that are like, that movie is hilarious. or like, I know people who think that like, they get something out of it. And like, I don't know how to tell them that they're wrong to do that. Like, I know feminists who like that movie, you know? Yeah. And so I always am like, I think it's very interesting how there's always that like, well, if I go and watch that, then I'm going to like the day after I become a serial killer or something like that. And it's like, I don't think that that's really the danger. But if you're worried about that, you might actually want to explore it a little bit, because if like, you know, if it's like that line that you cross and then you're just gone, you know, into the void forever. I mean, it seems like by delving a little bit into the void, sometimes we know like where we don't want to go, right? Or like, I don't know. That's not necessarily a question, but do you have any thoughts on that?
I have many thoughts on that, because I do think that like there is just a stigma when it comes to genre, which is why so many like TV shows never get nominated for awards, even though they're giving some of the best performances and some of the best special effects and makeup. Mm-hmm. And so like, it's hard to combat that, even though everybody has their own things that everybody's doing horror just in different levels. Like, let's be honest, like people who are reading those like mysteries at the grocery store, they like the horror. People who like those romances, that's a little bit dark and twisty, that's a little bit of horror. And so it's already creeping into so much, but nobody wants to talk about it. Because they're like, no, I see horror as this one thing, and so it has to be that one thing. And it's like, no, it's multitudes.
Because that's also a thing, too, is like, I mean, I think that people are always like, well, we could talk about the role that criticism plays for horror, right? Because, you know, it's important to get together and be like, hey, I want to talk about the things I like about horror. But it's also important to talk about the things that we don't like about it, right? yeah. So it's like, I mean, I think that those are equally valid conversations. And so you'll have, there's all of these conversations around it where people will be like, well, I don't like horror because it's misogynistic. And it's like, yeah, for sure. I can see why you would not like, you know, something like the movie Slaughterhouse or something. Yeah,
like 90% of it is that. And I yell that so much on my podcast. Yeah. But I think the more we can talk about it as an objective forum, the easier it is and the better it can be. Because, like, if we're never talking about it, we're just like, oh, it's this thing, then that doesn't help anything. Whereas when we sit there and we find spaces where we're not going to be yelled at for having an opinion, to be like, we all have a Stephen King story, but also, does Stephen King like brown people? Does he like women? Yeah,
exactly. It doesn't seem like it. Like, yeah. from the, like, 30 of that guy's books I've read, it does not seem like it. Yeah, because I feel like that's another thing, too, with that guy, right? Where people will be like, oh, well, like, there's, like, don't read it, because there's that one scene in it. And I'm like, it's not just one scene in it. Like, there is a lot of stuff in it where it's like, this guy is not cool with women. Like, maybe he becomes that later, but not today. Like,
no. And they like to pretend that it's just like this one instance here or this one instance there. And it's not. It's an epidemic because nobody talks about it. Nobody critiques it. We just like look the other way and nothing's going to get better that way, which is why I spend so much time, unfortunately, having to like fight with people on Twitter. People keep finding me and they're like, no, how dare you? You don't know. That's not problematic. It's like, I'm telling you it's problematic.
Yeah.
I gave you bullet points why. you're having a response because you love it and you don't know how to love something that's problematic and critique it because you're like, I have to love it with no fault whatsoever. It's perfect. It's shiny. It's new. As opposed to it's dented and there's some problems here and there and it should be better here about this thing. But yeah. I still like it.
Well, like the guy, you know, it's like we have even today, you know, it's like even now we have so many stories in horror that, you know, indigenous people are like the cause of, weirdly, you know, it's like, but they're not in the story at all, you know. So it's like Stephen King is like the guy for that, right? Like there's Dinner. Like God, oh my God, like God, Pet Cemetery, The Shining, like there's just like so many stories where you're just like, look, it's, if he did it like one time, like there's a lot of things I can let go of once. Yeah.
like he has literally never written a brown person who's not magical, and it's a problem. Yeah. But yeah. Like when you say that on Twitter or Facebook, the Chads find you. And yeah. So it's like, well, how do we have this discourse?
Right. Now all of a sudden he's problematic. And it's like, no, people have been calling this guy out for his problematic stuff literally since the time. Because I think that that's one of the big things that people love to try to pull is to be like, you know, like, oh God, it takes me back to the, you must remember this, did like that season that was about like Disney did the thing where they were like, well, we're going to keep Song of the South in the archive because now's not a good time for it. And then like Karina Longworth is like, you know, never was a good time for it. So let's talk about that. So like she goes into like the history of it and being like, no, people were against this then. Like this, we didn't suddenly realize that that was an offensive movie last year. Like that was like, it wasn't like of its time. Like that's not really what it was.
Exactly. Like racism is never trendy. It never is. Not all of us want that. And people misremember it and they romanticize it. And they're like, oh no, it was fine back then to exclude black people. And it's like, it wasn't fine. You just did it. And they're like, but you can't judge it for that. I'm like, yes, I can. I'm going to tell you all the movies are bullshit for excluding black people. And I'm going to say it loudly every other episode. So here we are.
And in horror, of course, like there is a really complicated relationship there. Like we have, I mean, it's like, I don't know like how comparable it is. For me, I like look at stuff. Like I remember, like as a gay person, I remember as a kid, like I would watch like lesbian vampire movies, and those movies are so offensive to gay people, but I loved them. Like I thought that they were the best and like was just like, I love these women. Like they are so cool. They live in a castle. They have like 15 wives. Like I love this. And it was like the only place where, I mean, as a kid, I was like a child of the 80s. So like there wasn't other gay people anywhere, you know? So it's like, that was it. Like that's all I saw. facade of like queerness really at all. And so it's like it can inhabit those spaces. Like, I think art in general can inhabit those spaces where you're like, yes, this is unbelievably problematic. Yes, it means a lot to me, you know? And then like also, I'm free to tell you that it's problematic still. Like, it's not just like, oh, I have to unabashedly love it. Like, we grow with the art, you know? Like, that's the thing is like, we live in a world where Stephen King wrote those books, and like, therefore we can build a different world on top of it. Like, that's like, that's the direction that we're supposed to be taking these things, in my opinion. But once again, not really a question.
And it starts with the conversations of what about this book is problematic before people adapt it. And that way they can, in theory, leave that out of it or adjust for it and have that conversation, as opposed to just being like, Stephen King is brilliant. And we want to keep as much of the offensive stuff as possible. And it's like, you don't need it. You don't need any of his like random chapters he inserts where he just drops the N-word 900 times. We don't need any of those ever.
And when was that cool? Like, that's kind of the thing too, is like, I mean, it's like that thing, right? Where like white guys really do get on one sometimes where they're like, yeah, I'm showing how racist this character is. And it's like, yeah, you could have just said that character's kind of a racist and we don't want to deal with it or something. Like, could have just been like, that guy seems like he sucks. Let's go over here.
It's like in The Shining, when those two go in the bathroom, nothing about me tells me that they're not racist. But yet Steven's like, they need to say the N-word 20 times. People know. And I'm like, yeah. I already assumed, Steven, you painted us a good picture. You are an author. You are a wordsmith. You gave us all the information we needed. Why are we doing this?
Oh my God. That guy. Yeah. It's like, sometimes I don't know. I've had people, as I'm sure you have as well, where it's like, I'll be like, God, this guy, out of all of the writers, he does great on me, extra special. But also he's one of those guys where it's like, everybody's read him. Like, he's everywhere. So it's like, whenever you're kind of like, okay, so I kind of don't love this guy, that it really does bring a bunch of people back in to like freak out on you and be like, but like The Stand is a masterpiece. It's like, no, because The Stand also has like massive amounts of racism in it. Like, you know, and it's like, they keep remaking it, and you keep, like, it's the same with Pet Sematary, where it's like, they remade that movie like 2 years ago, and they could have taken out the racism or added commentary on it, which would have been much better, actually, and just been like, okay, so this is not super cool that we keep using this like native burial ground trope. So here, let's build on that in a way that makes it be like better. Let's introduce native characters. Like, let's, you know, do something with it. But it's like, instead, because of people just shutting down that criticism, nobody felt compelled to build on that. And I think that sucks.
That and another huge part of it is that we keep excluding the people who should be in these rooms from the rooms.
Yeah.
And so, of course, Chad doesn't understand how racism works, because Chad is not offended by racism. He doesn't know what it is. It doesn't impact him. He's the first one to be like, are you sure that was racist? And so, of course, he's like, I don't see why I should cut this. I'm going to keep it. And then the rest of us like, Chad, you had one job, and it was to make this less offensive. And you were like, no, I'm Chad. And so we have to start getting more people of color in these rooms and with these like scripts and things, because we're going to keep having these same issues. I've watched a lot of movies these last 2 years that are like recent, and they have the same issues. Like, I have so many episodes, I'm like, this was an all white cast in 2019 or 2020. This character was severely mishandled as the one black person in the movie. And it's not going to get better if we don't talk about it. And if we keep hiring the same three Chads in a trench coat, we have to, we got to do something different. It's time.
It's like, horror has such tools to be able to move things forward. Right. And that is, I think, maybe why it becomes in some ways extra frustrating, because it's like, we're already like the side genre that like people consider to be like off, right? You know, like maybe there's something a little bit wrong with you for being into it, right? So it's like, we already have the space, like, where we can experiment, we can push progressive themes. Like, there's like an incredibly long line of progressive themes in horror, like, and so I always am kind of baffled when people are just like, yeah,
it's about like chopping people's heads off or something. No. And I'm like, I guess yeah. that too, but
yeah, no, like genre is this like really fantastical great world, which is why I get so upset, because I'm just like, you're telling me you can create all these monsters and you can create all of these universes and all these like parallel planets, but you can't envision people of color being there. You can't envision it not being defaulted to whiteness. Yeah. And so like your imagination's either broken or you did it on purpose and you'd unpack that.
Yeah. We jumped well into the deep end on this conversation. I am having so much fun talking to you about this, and you're like so insightful. I'm like learning so much, and I love talking to you about this. But I wanted to go back a little bit because I wanted to ask about what your horror origins are, because like I yeah. think everybody has different horror origins, right? I feel like I've done maybe 40 interviews with different like people who work in horror in different mediums and different aspects, and it's like we always have a different story and they're always kind of the same. Yeah. So it's like I would love to hear a little bit about what made you be so interested in this genre to begin with.
So I was number 6 of 8 kids originally, and a lot of brothers. I have one sister in that, and she's younger than me. Ooh. And so around the time I was about maybe 4 or 5, like I was like, why do they get to watch horror movies and I don't? Because again, my youngest, oldest brother's 11 years older than me. And so like on paper, it's like, oh, there's an age difference. Of course they can watch horror movies. But I didn't see that. I was like, this is sexism. I'm tired of sexism. It's fucking hell. And so I fought my mother, and I fought her, and I fought her. And she's like, fine, watch your horror movies, but don't come crying to me when you have nightmares. And so I started watching, like, Freddy Krueger and, like, Jason and Michael, and I started having imaginary friends that were very different from the other kids. And so I would just, like, be there with my, like, brothers who were, like, teenagers and adults, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, I love it when this body gets thrown through this window.
And, and then I'm going to go play with my, like, dolls or whatever, but, like, right now I'm watching people get thrown through windows.
Exactly. Like, Freddy Krueger was my first imaginary friend as a child. I switched him out for Michael Myers because he talked too much, and I think then I was even like, I won't be second in my imagination, even if you are cool. So,
Michael listens, okay?
He understood the role of a sidekick. So, yeah.
That is amazing. But how did that, because the podcast is much more recent. So yes. How do you feel like your love of horror has corresponded with your interest in theater and your skills as a playwright?
I think that it definitely helped shape me, because I was originally, so I always knew I wanted to write. I was always writing. But when I first started going to college, I was like, I'll do technical theater. And I think that's a little bitty part of just wanting to know how the blood works and how the things work. And understanding that, like, sometimes cheap isn't something to look down on, because, like, we mm-hmm. watched a lot of B movies with Elvira.
Yeah.
So you're like, these are fun. And so I think a part of that was that. And I think that it just, yeah, it involves imagination. And it was just always a thing I wanted to do and to, like, merge the two. And
yeah.
So I was definitely, like, that weird kid in, like, the shop class being like, oh, this chainsaws where this would happen, and that's the tool that was used in this movie. And so yeah. And when I started playwriting, I've always wanted to write a little slasher, because we don't have enough film slashers, we just don't. And while I'm always like doing what I'm doing with playwriting, it's always in the back of my mind is to be like, how do I make that a thing someday? And so I don't think it ever goes away. I think it's just, it's always there, but we've learned how to talk about it, because there's certain parts of ourselves that we're like, oh, this makes people uncomfortable, so I'm not going to talk about it. But what I've learned with this podcast is so many people are into the genre and we just didn't know it, or they weren't talking about it because they're like, oh, it's frowned upon.
Yeah. Even today, I know a lot more horror fans maybe than like ever in my life, but I am still, there's a lot of stuff that people are not going to sit down and watch with me, right? Yeah. So in a lot of ways, it can be kind of a solitary genre. Like, I think that it's fun when we can make it be a group thing. But, you know, there's no denying the fact. I mean, it sounds like you had a different experience from day one, because it's like if you were watching it with your brothers. But and then it's like my experience was like all by myself 100%, because I would be in trouble if like somebody caught me watching it. So it's like I think that that's kind of like bled through in my later life. And so, yeah, do you think that early on watching as part of like a family event, you know, like a little bit, do you think that that has kind of carried over in your love of horror and like talking about it today?
I think so, because again, like I was the first girl of the group, and so like I would not be ignored. So I was like, we're watching this one, this is why it's good, I don't want to hear your thoughts. And so it quickly became them trying to impress me and find things to scare me. And so I'm just used to sort of like being ahead, and I'm not, because I, as much as I watch, there are people out there who have years and years on me still. And so it's fun learning from them and listening to them and catching recommendations of stuff that I've missed because I was a baby in the 90s. And so it's good to have a community and be like, I'm not the best, but I'm on my way to being one of the very best, much like Pokemon. Like,
but I mean, I have faith personally. So I also am kind of curious, because we're mostly focusing this conversation around horror movies, but do you have interest in other horror mediums? Because I mean, I'm one of those that's like, I love the horror comics. I love the horror podcasts. Like, I love, you know, narrative horror podcasts, but also like the commentary as well. And then I'm constantly reading novels these days that are like horror novels. So is that something that, do you feel like each medium kind of suits a different horror need? Because I think I've heard a lot of people be like, I can watch a horror movie, but I don't want to read a book because then I'm like in my own head and it's like way too much. It's too scary or something.
Yeah, definitely. Because again, like horror it's a lot of imagination and suspending disbelief. So I love a good spooky play. I only get to read them because it's a pandemic. But I love the idea that I could someday go and see something and be like, somebody vomited over there because it's so awesome. I love it. And like my own little spooky 10 minutes. I love when somebody screams in the audience. That is my biggest compliment I will ever get. Because like, it's one thing to be like, oh, that could be funny. Or, oh, I'm going to give a pity chuckle. But to have somebody scream.
Yeah.
That's like when I'm that, like, yeah.
They meant that.
That's my new favorite. I have a 10 minute right now. That's my favorite because somebody screamed. And so I'm like, all the other compliments mean nothing. She screamed. I'm effective. Yeah.
People can tell you that they liked it all day long, right? But like the person who screams, you're like, well, that was a visceral reaction that you cannot lie about.
Right?
That one is on the paper. Have you checked out, I don't know if you're a Clive Barker fan at all, but like, so I was curious, did you ever check out his plays? Because I remember whenever I was a teenager, I was like looking for more of his stuff to get into. And I found a book that collected three of his plays, one of which was called The History of the Devil, where like the devil is put on trial. Have you like checked that out?
I haven't yet, because I found out about it like in grad school, because I probably looked everything. And so in grad school I was like, wait, is this the Clive Barker? But in grad school you're like, I'm suffering and things are stressful.
I'm reading everything. Like, I can't read that too.
But I'm hoping to revisit him, especially like because of the podcast we have. We have kind of a big theater following because we're both theater kids. And so it's just like lovely place of theater kids and horror nerds. And so I kind of feel like we have to do some plays at some point, maybe next season, because this season is pretty packed.
So like, there's something about horror where it's like, it's immediately intended to be kind of upsetting. So when we're looking at criticism, do you think that there is a different relationship between horror and criticism than there is criticism in other genres? Because I think because it's so intentionally upsetting, if you know, I was reading like a regular superhero comic or something, I could very directly be like, well, this is misogynistic, you know, or something like that. Whereas in horror, sometimes misogyny is playing a bigger role, right? Where you're like, it's like you'll have like a woman direct something like Slumber Party Massacre, where it's like, yeah, there's misogyny in that movie, but it's like, it was made by feminists, you know, and like they're kind of like doing a commentary on it. I'm just curious, do you think that horror is different to criticize? Because I sometimes do struggle with criticizing horror, because I'm like, it's like there's parts of it that you can very clearly criticize, but then there's parts where I'm like, you know, this would be completely out, you know, if I had this reaction in a romantic comedy, it would be the wrong reaction. So you could be like, that was like weird. That was a weird moment in that movie. Whereas in horror, you're like, yeah, it's like another weird moment in this movie. So I was just curious, do you think that it has kind of a different role?
Yes, I think that there's two issues at play with horror criticism. One is that usually horror fans don't get to be the critics because the bigger places just don't hire us. And so you have people who are like, Halloween is a knockoff of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and he thinks it's a spicy take. It's not.
Yeah, 100%.
And the places that do hire us, like, we are just such fans of the genre that we feel protective of it. And so, like, it is kind of, I hate giving a bad review. I do it because it's the truth, but I hate doing it. And I'm almost apologizing as I do it. I'm like, yeah, but also, and so that's why I like to focus on, like, the actual issues, because it's like, these are the facts. This is an all-white cast. He does not talk to women, clearly, because he seems to hate them. From all of his work is telling us. because you do want to be like, but like the blood effects were so great. And like,
the right, practicals, right.
I love practicals. I'm over CGI. And so like, it's weird because we are all rooting for it. We all want it to succeed and we all want more like it, or to see where it goes without the issues that we see in it. Because we're such fans of it and we don't usually get a platform. And so like, it's weird because, again, like, my podcast is very small, but, like, a lot of the indie directors and writers find us because they're like, my movie is being hashtagged. Like, I'll see what it is.
Oh, yeah.
And they've been very cool because, again, they're like, nobody talks about my movie because I'm usually a brown person. And they're just not concerned with me. And so they're like, I agree with your notes. Thank you for watching it. And it just, it's a little bit heartbreaking, and it makes me root for them even more because it's like, I didn't love your movie, but I spoke to the facts of it, and you're like, that's fair. And I'm excited to see my next movie. And I'm like, I'm excited to see your next movie, and hopefully you have a budget and support because you clearly didn't for this one.
Yeah, 100%. And you still got to give it up, right? Because it's like, at a certain point, you're just like, I mean, you're doing it. So,
right? I'm not doing it. Like, I'm sitting in my friend's apartment thinking about the rhino. I've not written anything, and we're not filming anything.
So I think that there is a lot of emphasis because literally, you know how it is. I mean, I think this is true of almost anything, all art, right? Like, one person does a thing and everybody's like, this is the whole new direction of horror or something. So I think, like, once, like, say Jordan Peele made, like, Get Out or something, everybody was like, oh my god, my mind is blown. And it's like, yeah, that was like a mind-blowing movie, don't get me wrong, but it's like a takeoff of the Stepford Wives, like, you know, and stuff like that. So it's like, and also clearly Peele is super inspired by, like, the Twilight Zone. Like, you can tell that this person has, like, roots in horror, right? This is somebody who has been interested in it for a long time. But I think that there's this way that people are like, oh, now horror is so progressive or something. And I'm like, but then you go like, okay, but horror was created pretty much by, like, Mary Shelley, right? And, like, Frankenstein was, like, a progressive novel. Like, that is, like, an incredibly progressive text. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on in Frankenstein. So I'm like, do you ever think about, and I'm sure you do, just based on the conversation we've had so far, but do you ever think about how people will be like, oh, now horror is becoming more progressive? And it's kind of like, maybe, like, it was actually kind of just regressive for a while.
Yeah.
Because, like, it started in a pretty progressive place. Like, it started with a book called The Modern Prometheus. Like, you know?
100%. This is what happens when, like, film bros get a hold of something for too long by themselves, because they yelled at us, and so we stopped engaging, and so they sort of took it over. And so it was all, like, boobs and blood and buckets of blood and boobs, and now we're like, but also we want it back. But horror did start. It was very much like The Outcast. It was like the feminists who were writing their pen names and Mary Shelley, and it was like the black and brown people trying to, like, make their movies and be uninterrupted. And so now, like, it's coming back to the people who it was originally created for, and, like, they just don't know what to do. People are literally upset because Candyman is too woke. And I'm like, no, no. What happened was the 90s was trying to be woke, but it was centered on whiteness because, again, white people were doing the things. And so you have Tony Todd chasing after people in his bloodline who are white, and it's about them as opposed to him. And, like, the backstories was handled. And now that it's being corrected, you're like, it's too woke. And I'm like, oh, no, you haven't done your research. And we're talking about Chad. And Chad's like, but it's my genre now. And it's my genre. It's been my genre since I was 3. And my mama said it was special. And it's like, well, look. I'm sorry your mother lied to you about that, too. But you need to give this back.
Oh, my God.
No, like, it definitely takes a different shape when the people who should be telling the story get to tell the story. Because this Candyman was not concerned with the white women.
It
was not for them, it was not by them, and so it's a different experience, and it's a kind of a commentary. I don't know how much of it is on purpose, how much of it I'm just reading into because I'm I'm a little bit salty. But I don't know how much of it is them asking who gets to tell the story and looking at the original trilogy as, hey, this was not your story to tell. That's why it's not working. And so, because it's one of those franchises where it's like, do I love the franchise or do I love Tony Todd? And when I watched it, I love Tony Todd. That's what happened.
Yeah.
And I told myself it was the franchise, but this was not ever going to work for me even as a child of the 90s. And so, and people today are like, but I'm not in your story anymore. Like, you don't need to be in my story.
Yeah.
You don't need to be there. It's my story. And it's gotten stuck. We're in a rut. And it's the same narrative over and over with disregard for women and brown people and anybody who is not cis, straight, white, male identifying Chads. And there's so many of us out here who have different perspectives and different viewpoints and different voices and different thoughts and experiences. And we don't get to see enough of that. And it's upsetting. Like, part of the reason I hate Hush is because no one from the deaf community was cast in that role, and there were so many blatant issues that even I was like, that's not okay, this is not right. And so I had to go find the people from the deaf community who were talking about it on their own YouTube channels and things, because they're not being paid for criticism either. And it's a vicious circle of Chadism, and we have to break the circle. We have to break the circle.
I would love to get some information from you on what you haven't been able to try yet that you'd love to do. We talked a little bit about, and this applies to both theater and your podcast, and you were talking a little bit about, hey, maybe I want to combine theater and my podcast, you know, like that kind of stuff. But where do you see it going from here? Where would you like to go with it? And where do you see like the evolution of what you're doing these days?
I'm really excited to try and break into TV because it's something I've always wanted to do. And so I'm going to start purposely shifting my writing more towards genre as opposed to sort of like dabbling every once in a while. Because I have a few plays that I think would be really excellent to anthologies. And so I'm going to play with that, and that's my own situation. And I have a couple of ideas that I'm needing to develop a little bit further. For the podcast, I'm just hoping we keep growing because we're starting to get like really awesome guests, and it's just cool to be in the space with them and hear their thoughts on these problems, because we don't have problematic people on our show. It's just a rule we have.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to sit down with people who are doing the right things and or are part of the margins that we're in, and just hear us all discuss the same situations from our own angles. Like we have a Thirsty Thursday situation we do where we go live on Thursdays. And we just had on Stan the Mechanic, who's like an amazing horror host who just left here TV and is on a new channel, which I just forgot. But like his website has it all on there. And he's lovely, but like he's not mainstream because, again, in order to like succeed, you have to like be cis, straight, white. And so it's just hard. It's hard. And so I'm happy that we're all finding each other, and I'm happy that we have this community, and I'm going to just keep growing it because that's what it could and should be. And that just seems right. I know that finding people who look like me in the podcast community is a big part of why I'm still doing what I'm doing, because I was like, I don't want to be the only one. I hate being the only one. And it's fun to hear other people who have the same issues and concerns and thoughts. And so, like, of course, I'm obsessed with, like, Girl That's Scary and, like, Brother Ghoulish and, like, A Nightmare on Fifth Street, which is different than Fierce Street. And, like, all these other podcasts who I love because, like, we're just like, we need to isolate this racist moment in this movie that erases as a masterpiece because nobody's talking about that. But I'm really offended by this. And the fact that nobody's talking about it is also offensive. Whereas other podcasters are just, like, glossing over it because it's not for them. They don't have to talk about race. And it's like, no. No. We need to talk about this when you're recommending this movie to people who might not want this trauma.
You're listening to Bitches on Comics, distributed by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away. Find more shows like Bitches on Comics by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.
Thank you for listening to Bitches on Comics. We are a bi-weekly podcast where we talk to your favorite comics and pop culture creators and critics about what matters to them in comics and pop culture, as you might have guessed. You can follow us on Twitter at @bitchesoncomics and on Instagram at @bitchesoncomics. Our website is, brace yourself, bitchesoncomics.com. If you go there, you can listen to any of our episodes, and we've got other shit that we put on tabs. I don't remember what it is, I am in charge of updating the website, however, so good luck.
Thanks for the heads up. I'll go to this website now.
If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You can also support the podcast by joining us on Patreon. Head to patreon.com/queerspec to learn more.
I'm Sarah Century, and you can find me at www.sarahcentury.com and Twitter and Instagram. Still Sarah Century on those.
I'm Essie Fleenor. You can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @SE_Fleenor.
I'm Monica Estrella Negra, and you can find me at www.audreysrevenge.com or on Twitter at @AudreyRevenge.
Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Churchfire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
Bitches on Comics is recorded in Denver, Colorado. We want to recognize the indigenous peoples who have inhabited and do inhabit this land. The Arapaho Nation, the Ute Nation, the Cheyenne Nation, and others who have been erased from our history and collective memories through colonization.